In the world of recovery, many paths lead to the same destination, healing. But what if there was a different, more holistic way to get there? Today, I'm talking with someone who's been called the best kept secret in the world of addiction and trauma recovery. Now I'm going to say this wrong. Jen Foote? Yes?
Yes, you got it.
Jen Foote is the founder of the Recovery Concierge and brings a unique 360-degree approach to treatment that goes beyond conventional methods. She'll share her own lived experience and discuss how to integrate trauma-informed model that can meet people wherever they are with compassion, strategy, and unwavering support. We'll dive into how to heal and how to be on this journey at your peak performance, not just survival. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Edna. It's a true pleasure to be here today.
Okay, so I'm going to dive right in. You've been called the best kept secret in the world of recovery. Why do you think you're unique and with your approach, with your 360 degree approach?
Okay, so with all due respect, I think yes. Recovery is one of, addiction recovery in particular, is one of the areas in healthcare, behavioral health, that has really poor outcomes. And I think we need to raise standards. Like, we don't settle for those outcomes in physical health or mental health. We try to raise standards wherever we can. And so through my own lived experience, as well as seeing, you know, people, AA, traditionally nothing wrong with AA, 12-step has really dominated the marketplace, and there has been success in that. But there's also a tremendous amount of stigma in addiction, especially. I always say addiction is the poor relative of mental health. And so therefore, it really creates a lot of barriers for people getting care. And at best, it can be a very short-term, short-lived without complete, I wouldn't say complete, but what I would say would be, what do you call it? I'm just trying to struggle for the words. Excuse me.
That's all right.
Where there's maintenance, like any other condition, right? Like there's maintenance in the terms that there's regular checkups and there's a step down approach and all of those things, which often lack in recovery, like 30-day treatment, you're out, go to 12-step and you're on your way.
Right.
Good. But I love to go to the theory of good, better, best. What else can we do? What else can be? And for people who have complex trauma or really complex childhood or come with chronic PTSD, which I did, I was absent for 7 years, but very unwell. So I don't always think absence is a testament of true good recovery. We want to be thriving. Right. We want to be flourishing. And that is often, it's missing in a lot of the models. It's about absence. We're measuring, I think, one metric where we should be measuring more.
Oh, wow. So I know that it is complex, and I know, you know, when I first encountered like addiction, that was like they only focused on that part. And again, like you said, it's always like a revolving door. They're back, you know, doing that. You know, I really want to understand this, because this is like the crux of what's going on pretty much like everywhere right now. And there's a big focus on that, especially starting with children. So, you know, what other parts besides, like, you know, that you look at, you know, besides the addiction part?
Okay, well, we have to look at all behavior has purpose. If we look at someone who has a misalignment in their thinking and in their behavior, there is not harmony, it's integrated harmony, it's a lack of that. There's a reason.
Good.
There's a reason why that person is acting out. So people have focused traditionally on the addiction as the problem, which is problematic, don't get me wrong, but there is something that's driving that behavior in the first place, and that is often the missing piece. And once we get to what is driving the behavior, then we can really correct it. But unless we're incorporating that part into it, and then again, you know, with relapse, if we look at relapse as relapse rather than a reoccurrence, which could happen in any disease management illness,
right?
And we can take the stigma out, and then that person is not a failure. The person who's struggling with addiction already feels like the worst flawed human in
the
world.
Absolutely.
So we don't need to add more salt on their wound. We need to give them more compassion. We need to love them up so they can understand how they got here and what they can do from this place moving forward.
That's good. I love that you say love them up, because, you know, what I've seen is a lot of, you got to do this, you got to do that. And they're like struggling even to do those things, but love them up. You're so right. There is no love and compassion in those steps at all. It's just like regimen. It's regimen, you know.
100%. And it feels like this is the first time for many that they're being taught any tools or structure.
Right.
But you also have to remember that shame drives the addictive cycle. So if someone thinks that they're flawed, it's not what's wrong with you, it's rather what's happened to you.
Right.
And Dr. Bruce Perry, who wrote a book on trauma, which is, you've never really met someone who has an addictive issue without some trauma. Now, I get the spectrum on that. So, you know, I'm talking more big T or more adverse childhood experiences, which most of us had. Everybody generation was doing the best they could, but really it didn't translate so well, which is why we have conscious parenting. So, you know, and every model has its faults. But for the most part, you know, we really weren't given what we needed. And so therefore, that person is struggling with who they are on a multitude of levels.
Right.
And unless we can really remove them and say, okay, what can we do from this space forward? Understand the reason they're misaligned, they're not integrated, and then let's help them move forward is a whole different model of care.
Right. Your services go beyond, you know, the traditional therapy, as I'm seeing now. What's one thing that you do with your clients that most people in your field would consider unconventional?
So I think things are slowly catching up. So I came before trauma was trendy. My recovery journey started in 1993. I was in my early 30s at the time, and I had a complex, I probably have lived with C-complex PTSD for at least 5 decades. I had no idea that's what it was. I couldn't understand. I was doing everything that was prescribed to me. So I went to rehab. I had a young family. I was abstinent for 7 years. I attended 12 steps. I attended aftercare, but I would keep relapsing. Not every day, but after 2.5 years, after 17 months, after 4 years of abstinence, I couldn't understand why, because I had a trauma history. So one of the things I think that's different now that we integrate is probably very similar to what you do, is we look at subconscious reprogramming. What is the driving force behind someone's programming? Because our subconscious program is linked to our emotional brain, which then dictates our behavior, our emotions, and then our behavior, right? So unless we're getting to that part, at best, you're just going to put a lid on it for a period of time. And then it's only a matter of time. I say it's like whack-a-mole. You put one thing down and something else is going to pop up.
Yes,
it will pop up in eating. It will pop up in sex addiction, whatever. It will come somewhere, right?
Yep.
Because you really haven't looked at the root driver. So that's one area. The other area is somatics, embodiment, and nervous system regulation. So trendy again. Nobody knew what that was 10 years ago, but I've been studying it for the last 20 years because that was my way out. I went on a quest to figure out how to get well because nobody was giving me the tools. And I was a tenacious spirited person who felt that I deserved better and my children did. And that's what just sent me on a quest. And I guess I have a relentless sort of pursuit to figure out how to move beyond that, because I'm really intrigued with personal development. And the more we know now is that there's so much, we now know that instead of it being a top-down approach, brain-body, it's an actual body top-up approach. We know that we have neuroception, which means we have filters in our body that really perceive fear, good things, things that we should be cautious of. So we may not have the acute memory of something that we're scared of, but our body knows it. And then it starts in the body and then it goes up to the brain, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. And so we have to tune into ourselves. And I think the challenge is obviously is if you learn to disconnect from your body, which is what I did, I had a good head and I thought, okay, I'll just run with that. And eventually you can outrun yourself. You just cannot outrun yourself. You've got to connect and integrate back into your body. And your body has tremendous intelligence. Like, take for example your heart. Mm-hmm. Your heart has 40,000 neurons. 40,000 neurons. That's brain cells.
Yeah.
Incredible.
That's really
discounted. That's when someone says they're heart sick, they mean it. Yeah. They mean it. They feel off. So I think for too long we've discounted our bodily intelligence, and our subconscious brain is actually running our life. And so unless we get a handle on what's going on for us, I think at best we can just dial it down.
Yeah, I like that. We've not paid attention to our bodily intelligence. Love that. I haven't heard that. That's really good. That's really, really good.
Thank you.
You also focus on peak performance. How does the addiction and peak performance, how do they intersect?
Well, I think there was an old saying that you want to get out from surviving to thriving, right? And I originally bought into that, and I think thriving is good. But what if we could actually tap into the innate essence of who we really are without our titles, without our, you know, accolades in life, right?
Yeah.
Who are we really without our name, without our title, without our look, right?
Yeah.
And I believe that we all have our unique spiritual curriculum. We all come to this earth with a curriculum by the family we're given, by our life experiences, whatever that may be. And so for me, to get out of addiction, and when I first went into recovery in 93, I felt like it was a death sentence. I'll be very frank with you. It was so stigmatized. None of my friends who even enjoyed substances recreationally even thought they had a problem, let alone probably thought I did. I knew I had a problem. That wasn't the issue. The issue was it was so stigmatized, and it was like I felt like a cloud was following me everywhere I went over my head. Like, it's that kind of feeling. And then when I found true freedom through some of my quest for modalities and trying different things, from Kundalini yoga to studying to become a somatic practitioner to becoming an addiction counselor, NLP trainer, all the different things out there. It's so funny. Like, why are we incorporating this? This doesn't even make sense to me that we're still behavior with willpower. Like, really? Because we all know that willpower. Thank you. I sometimes feel like I'm the only person who thinks this way, because so many people are very stuck in more traditional models, and there's nothing wrong with them because they may work for somebody, but they fail too many. So this is one of the reasons why it didn't work for me.
It
worked to a degree, but it didn't take me all the way. It managed to get me clean enough that I was sober, but not enough to flourishing in life.
Right.
So I think, you know, thriving or becoming resilient, good. Mm-hmm. I think flourishing is even better, personally.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a better word. But I love what you're saying, because, you know, when you're learning, like you said, you're learning your spiritual blueprint. I love that, because that's where I am right now. And I'm just uncovering who I was before all of this. The titles and the trauma and all this stuff is on top. And I'm just learning, re-embracing who I am. And I was talking to my friend, and I was telling her that I knew that I was clairsentient years ago, like as a kid. It was just innate, and I can do it. You know, it wasn't like I had to conjure up anything, you know, and it was just there. My mother knew it. And she's like, how do you know that? She would ask. I said, it's in my brain. And she goes, wow, if it's in your brain, there's nothing I could say about that. But she's like, she just said, wow. And I remember this, I was 9. And I was telling my friend, I felt ashamed because sometimes the things I say bothered people. You know, kind of upset people.
Yeah, because you can see things others can't.
Yeah, and so I would not say it. I would be, I stopped saying it. And one day I remember I was like 12, and I looked at this woman. And she was visiting my mom, and I looked at her, and she looked at me, and I said, I leaned over to my mom and said, Mom, her husband is beating her. I see a black eye. And my mom's like, I don't see a black eye. She says, I said, I see her black eye. And she goes, just hush, go in the room. And that was the first time I said, okay, I'm not going to say anything. But the next week she came back over. It was true. He had been doing it for a long time. It was true. And I had stopped even like trying to be around people and even like do anything about it. And that's when I started being quiet. So I started like hushing up every time. Cause a lot of people, I could feel things and I would hear voices all the time. Like, is that me talking like that? And I would be very quiet. So for years I was quiet, you know, and I told her, and you know, she said to me just exact opposite. She said, go to school and learn that. I was like, well, then how did I get it the first time?
Yeah, I was born for this.
Okay. I went to school and got this. And I was like, no, I don't think I need to go to school. I think I need to embrace it, walk in it and just embrace it and live there. And I'll learn as I'm going because I don't think that it takes books. I think it, you know, packing all that other stuff up, then I have to prove myself. And then it's too much. And you get back into comparisons. It's all of that stuff, you know? Well,
100%. It's very lonely to walk a different path, right?
Yeah.
And I understand what you're saying about that. And then your mother probably never looked at you the same way before because but she was probably overwhelmed that she didn't know what to do because how do you know this, right?
Yeah. She always calls me the why girl. I ask questions why it was like that. Why was that like that? And I question everything and I challenge everything. So she always says that to me. You're my white girl. You know, you have to know how things tick. You know?
Beautiful.
That's very interesting. I love what you're saying. I think this brings a whole different, you know, holistic is a buzzword too, but what you're saying and doing is not buzz. It's not buzz. It actually working for a lot.
How I look at it is it's multidimensional and we're multi-layered as well. Like we're complex. Being a human is a complex.
Yes.
You know, we need a manual. We need a user's manual to be human, right? Like, right? Look at the core state of the world today. And we're just talking about optimal behavior. We're not even talking about crazy.
Right.
I think we need a manual. We need to understand what drives us, what drives our behaviors, our decisions, our thinking. Our emotions, because unless we have some understanding, it's like most of us, I call it hydroplaning. We hydroplane through our own life.
Yes.
We're kind of in the car, but we're not really driving it. Yes. We're thinking somewhere else, right? When we've done it enough times. And so we're not conscious of what we're doing or thinking or saying, right? Yeah. How many times have we answered somebody and said something when we really haven't taken it in, right?
Right.
So an understanding if we want to go beyond just existing and just automatic pilot, right?
Yeah, right. That's cool. That's good. I like that hydroplaning because we do that a lot. Do a lot. You recently started a training academy.
Yes.
What's the biggest misconception you hope to dismantle for other professionals in the behavioral health field?
Talk therapy will only take you so far. It really is like limited at best. It's not to say that it's not good. There's good, better, best always. But it really, first of all, it exasperates trauma. You can't talk your way out of trauma. You have to process it, number one.
Yes.
And that was my issue because I was going to therapy for years. I've been in therapy on and off for decades over the years. And I couldn't understand why I was getting worse, not better. And that was part of it. There wasn't an alternative back in the day, right? So I was doing what I thought was the right thing, go to a psychotherapist or, you know, go to a therapist or whatever, go to rehab, do all the things. And really, externally, my life looked good. I was married. I had a career. I had children. But inside, I wanted to off myself. So that wasn't a good metric of what I call recovery. So, you know, I was abstinent too. So that's, you know, sometimes abstinence doesn't always equal good recovery either. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be abstinent. There's, again, spectrum on all of this. And I think the spectrum of conditions and illnesses as well. And so for me, you know, it was really about learning how to really come back to myself. You know, you hear about the journey of coming home. Yes. I was terrified to look at myself. I'm going to tell you something. I hated myself so much, I couldn't look in the mirror.
Wow.
Let alone use my voice.
Right. Wow.
So that was...
You might be right, because you might be right, because I think I didn't look in the mirror either.
I was mortified to see what was going to reflect back on me. Because in my mind, it was much worse than what was probably happening, but I just couldn't face myself.
Yeah.
And it's not because I was the worst human who ever lived. It was because programming was running my life. Mm-hmm. And I had a bias for negative. So we do have a negativity bias. We remember the bad much better than the good. The good, like, it doesn't stick like Teflon. It just slides off, right? But the bad, we remember. And remember the narratives. What's the matter with you? Who do you think you are? You know, whatever they were, right? And we all have them.
Yep.
And that was what was running the show for many, many years.
Wow. That's good. What's one message you would give someone who feels that they've tried everything and their recovery is like a hopeless cause?
Well, never give up, number one.
Okay.
Because there is answers out there. But I think that often the very thing that we don't want to do is the very thing that we need to do. I think intuitively, sometimes we need to go to the places that scare us, right? Mm-hmm. For me, that was coming home to my body after years of sexual abuse, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm just going to be a good thinker and smart and all the things. And so head up worked really, really well for me until it didn't. And so coming home to my body would mean that I actually have to feel something.
Right.
I have to sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
That felt like insurmountable.
Yeah.
But it was the very thing that gave me freedom.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing I tell my my clients too. You have to come home to your body. And it's a very frightening thing because for so many years you've been ashamed of it. You know, you didn't like this, or you were hiding from it, whether you were getting fat or skinny or, you know, or just doing things to kind of like relieve yourself and have control using that body. You know what I mean? And you have to come to it, come back to it, and just really embrace yourself. It's hard.
100%. And I think the very thing, you know, I've watched people, because I counsel people and coach as well. Mm-hmm. And I've watched people do everything. They go, oh, I'll try yoga. I'm going to try breath work. I'm going to try that. And okay.
You're talking to me, girl. You're talking to me.
Right. So we go through this like, okay, let me just try this. And I think this is going to be it. Right. But you know what? At the end of the day, we're the common denominator in everything that we do. We follow ourselves wherever we go. And sometimes we just have to do what we don't want to do if we really want that personal freedom. It's the same with fear. Mm-hmm. In order to get onto a podcast like this, or to speak out and feel like I have a different view, I have to get over myself. That's been hard for me.
Yes.
Absolutely. But nobody's going to hear me if I don't get over myself.
Yeah.
Right? So like, sometimes we have to do what we don't want to do, right? It's
right, exactly, exactly. It is I heard somebody tell me, no, I'm healed. She said, I'm healed. I said, girl, I am still finding things in the back of the shadows that I was like, oh, yeah, that's still there. So I said, no, I said, it's a healing, because you want to live, you want to flourish. And when you're flourishing, and I said, think about a blossom, a flower. When it's opening, it's a whole lot of steps in there to that healing process. So we're not always, we're healed on one spectrum, but then there's other levels.
Well, I think that's where you just hit, you know, people... so I don't believe we're ever there yet. It's like the kids.
Yes,
No. We're never there. There's no destination until we die, right?
No, until we get there.
However, the good news is it does get better or
better,
easier to deal with. So instead of it being like smacking your face, like it's overwhelming, it slowly starts to recede into the background.
Yes.
And so then it doesn't take over your life in the same way that it used to, thing is, right?
Yeah.
And so we get more comfortable with it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to. I mean, I love what you said. It's not in your face anymore, because, you know, just, you know, even just like dealing with, like you said, your body. I mean, I had, I think even when I was modeling, I hated the mirror. That was pretty bad. You just reminded me of that. I was like, I had to take a reflection on that.
Because my eye goes to the flaws before anything.
Yes.
Look at me and go, oh, don't like that. And then everything else is now derailed, right?
Yes. It's off. You're off the track. Yeah. As soon as you see that one thing, it's off the trails. And that's it. You have to bring yourself back in. I'm often says, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. You know, and I have to regulate myself back there and then recenter and then go back and look in the mirror and start again. Yes, I get it. Oh, you was talking to me today, girl. You was talking to me. I don't know who else you was talking to, audience. You're getting what she's putting down because I'm getting it. It's you're talking to me. A lot of things that you just described, I may have not had, you know, like the proverbial, if that's the word, like the drugs or, but I was a cutter. And my body was the only thing I could control. So I wouldn't eat. So I controlled where how my food was put on my plate. I controlled how I ate it. I had control.
There's many, as I said, the spectrum, I'm sorry that you struggled like that.
Yeah.
But most women and men now too struggle with body image issues, yes, right? And so it's an area where the restriction is an area where you can control, right? And look what it does. And unfortunately, we get rewarded
for
restriction. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is the perverse part of that equation. Yes. Right? So, but yes, so everything comes in spectrum. I think, you know, addiction is what I call a misalignment. We're not in alignment in an integrated way. And so whether it's your phone, how many, like we haven't even seen the tip of what's coming next between sex addiction, food addiction, technology addiction, even work. Like for me, I fell into work addiction.
Yeah,
in the sense
too.
That it was
respectable. Once all that stopped, I went to work.
Like you get rewarded for it. It's a good reward in work addiction. But it robs you of balance. It robs you of many different things. Sometimes your health, right? Yeah. Depending on how bad you get for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt after that was over, then I fell into work addiction. And it was like 60 hours. And I found myself almost sleeping at the job. I'm like, what the freak am I doing? And I was working for myself, so I didn't have to. But it was so addictive. You know, and then I fell into the strong woman's addiction. You know, that one, don't ask for help. Do everything yourself.
I've got this.
I had that shirt on all day, you know, that superwoman shirt on all day. And then when I got home, I was like dying. I was crying uncontrollably. It was just, a mess. I was a complete mess. And I often say in a lot of my videos, I say that strong woman syndrome killed me. It was addictive. People were saying, you're such a strong woman. And I could feel my adrenaline go, I'm doing it. Never asked for help. And I ran myself into the ground. You know, I ran myself into the ground because of that. Yeah, I was addicted.
I understand that. I'm in a season of the sacred pause.
That's great.
With still trying to 10x whatever I do in terms of impact, but really being very discerning now around what do I have to say no to in order to say yes to certain things, right? And that's so foreign to me because I used to think like I can do it all. And now I'm recognizing you just can't. You're going to have to make choices, make choices.
Yeah.
And that's a hard one to get your head around if you've been that proficient most of your life, right?
Yes.
I can do it.
That's true. That is really true. Oh, this is some good stuff. Well, this is an incredible, powerful conversation with the one and only Jen, right? Am I saying right? Foot? Yes?
Correct. Yes.
Yay. Thank you for your vulnerability, for showing us the path to healing that is holistic and one that includes mind, body, and spirit. To learn more about Jen's work and discover her unique approach to recovery, visit her website at therecoveryconcierge.com. Can't miss that, therecoveryconcierge.com. And if you want to leave her a comment under this video, or on audio, you can do so, and I'll get it right over to her. If this episode resonated with you, don't keep this powerful message to yourself. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it. And remember to like, subscribe, and leave a comment to let us know your biggest takeaway. Your journey to healing is valid, and you don't have to do it alone. Bye for now.
Thank you. Absolutely beautiful.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be.
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.